Hello golfers and welcome to another edition of the On Par podcast. Recently, I was fortunate to catch up with golf course architect Jim Urbina to discuss the restoration work at the charming Rockville Links Club. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did, and as always, thank you for your support. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the tri-state area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
And we're back. Pleased to be joined by golf course architect Jim Urbina. Jim, thank you for joining me, and how are you?
I'm doing great, Anthony. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. I just did a little site visit to one Rockville Links, which you're all too familiar with. So I've been there a couple of times, but there's been some more changes going on there, and it's absolutely stunning. I love it. It's beautiful. And I'm just kind of curious, I wanted to start with just the special place that Rockville Links has, being a Devereaux Emmett golf course, and maybe you could just sort of give us a little capsule that makes Rockville Links so special.
Great question. And to be honest with you, when I was asked to come down and take a look at Rockville Links, give my opinion, make suggestions to the club, I was working at the Garden City Golf Club.
Okay.
Doing some restoration work, which is also a Devereaux Emmett and Walter Travis design. And so when I was approached by Mr. Steve Smith, the Greens chairman at Rockville, I had never heard of Rockville Links. And he said, well, we're a Devereaux Emmett. Do you mind coming down and taking a look? So I drove down south, not too far, as you know, your listeners know, not too far from Garden City.
Sure.
And I happened upon the property. Drove in, looked at it, dead flat.
Yep.
And so my first impressions was that, you know, what kind of golf course could be here? It's dead flat. How much interest would it have? And so I walked around unannounced. It was raining. It was in December. I walked around unannounced before I had met up with Mr. Steve Smith, and I looked at it and thought, well, wait a minute, this doesn't look like the Devereaux Emmett Walter Travis golf course I just came from at Garden City. Something's going on here, right?
Sure.
And so I walked around, took in the sights and sounds, and waited for Mr. Steve Smith to show up. When he showed up, my first question is, I said to him, I thought you told me this was a Devereaux Emmett. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, it was. And I said, oh, okay. So that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a glimpse of what a modern looking Devereaux Emmett is. And mm-hmm. So that cleared it up quickly for me. My first impressions, Anthony, cleared it up when he said it was a Devereaux Emmett and it had been modernized. So there began the story. As I asked Steve Smith, I said, well, do you have much information on its legacy, on its history? And he said, we really don't. We don't have many photos. We don't have much documentation. Where could I get that at? And so I had sent Mr. Smith some links to sites where you can gather aerial and ground photos from. And he did just that. But our conversation that day was, well, what do you want to do, and what don't you like about the golf course, or what do you like about the golf course? So our discussion very early on was what they had and what they really wanted to do with it, Anthony. And that's the question I always ask clubs who call me when they are interested in at least seeking out my ideas. What do you want to do? What is your mission statement? What is your club all about? And that's what Rockville Links was trying to do early on in 2011, 2010, find out about their history. And they were at least seeking me out to help them find that history. So that was my first impressions. Flat ground, modern looking Devereaux Amet, even though it was built in 1924. And so let's find out more about it. And how do we do that? That was my first impressions way, way back when.
How divorced was what you saw in the aerials and when you started to uncover more imagery from its past? How divorced was that from what you were currently looking at when you did your little unannounced walk around?
Well, on the unannounced walk around, I noticed there was some old cavities. There was old remnants, if that makes sense to you.
Sure, sure.
Of what a bunker, where a bunker may have been. And for sure, Anthony, for sure, I could tell where the greens had shrunk in size. Because what people don't know is every golf course evolves.
Sure.
Every golf course changes. And so my job, and which I've been doing for years, and Anthony, I love building new designs. I really enjoy doing that. That's just been kind of put on hold because there's not been a lot of new golf courses being built. But when I'm not building new designs, I enjoy restoring old ones. Mm-hmm. And so I knew what to look for. I knew what to look for as far as how far the greens had shrunk. And because I had worked at Garden City Golf Club and I had seen other famous Devereaux Amet designs, including St. George's, Rockaway, I understood that there were bits and pieces that I could see, but other bits and pieces that had been erased. So now let's find out what had been erased. And how do you do that? Well, you find old aerials. And the first aerial that Mr. Smith sent me, my jaw dropped about 6 feet to the floor because what they had there was so much different. What they had there was so much different than what I made my first tour unannounced walking around. So totally, totally just couldn't believe what had been erased. And I was excited within myself to see if Rockville Links was ready. Could they, would they restore the golf course back to its original time and place, 1924, understanding that the modern game has changed quite a bit.
You must have been waiting for that verdict to come in. I imagine you would have to sort of contain yourself because knowing what you might be able to do, but having to wait for that answer from the committee is quite, you know, must have been a little torturous, I think.
Well, you know, in a way it was torturous for me.
Yeah.
Because I knew what they could have, if
right.
That makes sense.
Sure.
But for the club, it was about understanding what they had and if we could bring it back to its full glory. The little things, Anthony, the little things. And that's that my containment, my excitement. Man, if they just let me restore the second green, they could have one of the coolest little green and green surround complexes in the South Long Island area. And you think to yourself, Anthony, just one green, one little section, some bunkers taken out, and you could recapture history. That's how simple it appeared to me. And that's how the idea that if they would let me, we could really bring back something cool and entertaining.
Give myself and our listeners a little glimpse into what is your process? How does this, how does this work for you? Rockville Links gives you the green light and they say, for the most part or whatever, you have carte blanche or whatever you do, whatever it is, whatever level of green light they give you. What's your process like?
So the process is first finding out their history. And so Mr. Smith had done that. He had gathered some information, some old aerials, and he supplied me with 3 and 4 different eras of aerials. So I could see in the aerials the transformation from 1930 to 36 to 40s to after the war to the early 60s. And so I could see what was going on. And so as I understand what was going on, I could better explain to the club how the process had changed with the club and what had happened to the golf course. So my first job is to find the history. Mm-hmm. So I gather information. I go and research the USGA library. I do a lot of research into the history. Then once I've developed my game plan, my master plan, okay, this is what you have today, Rockville Links. This is what you used to have, 1924, 1926, 1928. This is how we can recapture that. We erase all of the modernism that was Rockville Links, mm-hmm. and we institute all that was old, redigging old bunkers, putting back greens the way they used to be. And when I develop that plan, then I present that plan to the membership. And we did a walkthrough of 2 holes at Rockville Links with the Greens Committee. And when we did that, I asked them to think with me and mm-hmm. not look at the golf course the way it is, but think with me how the golf course looked back in their early middle 20s.
Sure.
And so when I go through that process with the committee and I show them what's about to happen, then they decide to move forward. And when they decide to move forward, that's when I get excited. That's when the golf course superintendent steps in. That's when the Greens Committee gives me the full backing to move forward to recapture history. But that process has to go through the steps.
Sure.
You just can't go in there and start tearing up stuff. People want to know. You have to communicate. And that's the part that we do. We communicate, we show, we walk through, and then we institute.
Do you find that, and I'm not speaking specifically of Rockville Links, but just in general, my father was a general contractor, and sometimes I found, we found that it's hard for, not everybody is visual, right? So you may have,
correct.
You have a Greens Committee of a bunch of people, and some people just may not see it. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about Rockville Links or wherever, it could be any, golf course in America or wherever. But people, not everybody sees things or imagine things the same way or just don't get it visually. How hard is that to sort of walk them through that?
So I do the best I can, and you are absolutely correct. Not everybody could visualize. So when I walk on a golf course, unfortunately, Anthony, when I walk on a golf course, I'm always looking to see what was there, how it has changed, and what I could do to help it restore in the sense of golden age design. So now I have to convey that idea to the Greens Committee. So what I did in our walk around is I put out pin flags, the little tiny pin flags, and it shows them approximately where a bunker would be. Mm-hmm. And then I do a paint gun, and I paint lines where fairways are going to be, where greens are going to be, and I try to visually, as much as I can, in two-dimensional form, paints and pin flags, show them what's about to happen. But in my mind, I'm already thinking three-dimensional, and I know some of them can't, but I do my best to explain what I'm doing by pin flags and paint, and then, unfortunately, it now becomes trust, Anthony.
Yep.
Trust me.
Yep.
Just like your father must have said many times, I know what I'm doing, trust me.
Right.
And The committee, all they're simply going to do before they hire me is go talk to the last 20 golf courses I did before Rockville.
Sure.
And they'll say, yep, this guy knows what he's talking about. Trust him. And so it's part explanation and part trust. And in the end, when the golf course is complete, it all seems so simple, but those first days were so important. And it's the communication, like your father and like what I have to do. We have to communicate. Please, to the best of your ability, visualize with me, and then in the end, trust me.
Well,
and that's all you could ask.
Well, what they have there now is, I think, is something pretty special. I really love that. I really enjoy that golf course. It's a fun golf course. It has I don't know if you want to call it a little bit of a quirk, but enough quirk in it. I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I like quirk. I don't think, you know, everybody makes that such a negative connotation. I find that as part of its character. It's got some open holes. It's got some short holes. It's got some that intimate part of the property where 14, 15, 16 is. But I want to get there. But you're right. That green, number two green, is really, really something special. But number seven green is amazing. That complex to me is the thing that I thought about the whole ride home today when I left there. That green complex is really one cool complex.
Can't disagree with you. I wish I could think about that green when I do new designs.
Right.
But it's hard to.
Yeah.
It's really hard to because it's so contrary. If you're with me on this, it's so contrary to the visual aspects of what you would think that you would do standing in the fairway. That green's going from right to left, but the bunkers on the left and front right make it feel like it's going left to right.
Right,
and
exactly.
That's so, your brain is so, that's quirky. And for somebody to visually do that left to right bunkering with the green that goes right to left, that's pretty cool, pretty unique. Pretty quirky, but imaginative. I mean, imaginative. I can't disagree with you one bit.
Yeah, I actually, when once I was done, I left and I went back into the fairway just to look back at it again to see if that's what I really thought I saw. Like, because like what you said, because that's one of the things you do, right? You look at the bunker lines and you see where the high spots are and, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right.
You know,
that's
and so right. I was like, wait, that doesn't, I mean, when I got on the green, I was like, this totally feels totally different. So I went back and I thought my mind was playing tricks on me and I realized, no, that's what it was. And then you got that sneaky little pop bunker in the back, which is kind of cool that you don't even notice if you're, you know, you may not even notice it for some time playing that golf course if you didn't know it was there. But it was I had walked around, so it was really cool. That's just a fascinating green. I really love that.
And, Anthony, modern golf design just doesn't think about that because they don't stand in the fairways and they don't stand in the dirt and look at them long enough to make them appear like that. It's genius. It's left to right, bunk green, right to left green. Very good observation. I wonder how many other people see what we see in that hole.
Yeah, I loved it. Like I said, it was the one thing that, you know, I thought about on the way home, other than that other portion of we're going to get to that little intimate section in 14, 15, 16. I love that. And even into a little bit into 17, I really like that corner of the property. But yeah, and it just made me think now when you said that, I wonder if maybe, you know, those guys like Devereaux had more time to ponder those things, whereas new sort of construction, we seem to be in a little more of a rush and there are timelines and there's money and involved. And I just wonder if the nature, the laborious nature of when they did their work, they had the time to contemplate what they were creating.
Well, I think they had more time to contemplate. Mm-hmm. They weren't pressured by the dollar, which I have to respect. You have to respect.
Sure.
Somebody's paying for that golf course to be built and designed and played.
Sure.
But as I learned from my mentor, Pete Dye, that's how I got my start.
Mm-hmm.
You stand on the ground and you look at it and you build something. And if you don't like it and it doesn't fit your eye, you go and fix it and you do it again. But when you're doing it yourself, when you're doing it yourself and you're playing with it, like Pete taught me, you could play with it two or three times. And I'm sure Devereaux Emmett did that. And that's the cool, sneaky thing about Rockfield Links. It happens on two green. It happens on six and seven green, as you alluded to. Mm-hmm. And then those little tiny details continue on around that whole golf course. And you can't go in the driveway and think, oh, it's just flat ground like I did back in 2011. It was way more intricate than that, way more thought out. We just had to restore it to let it evolve and let it show itself, because there is some cool, cool stuff at Rockfield Links.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And I really love, want to get to that section. Maybe it's just me, and I think that's what, you know, golf course, when people who love playing golf and love golf course architecture, of course, as you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder and all that kind of stuff. But I love that intimate feel that you get into that corner of that property. I feel it every time, 14, 15, 16, especially, and all the work you did on 15 is tremendous.
Isn't that something?
But that, it's unbelievable. But, and it's nothing, you know, it's a hybrid off the tee. It's a, a 9-iron wedge in. It's nothing, like, it's not crazy, but once you start getting off the fairway, when that place is playing fiery, you're in big trouble. But I just like the intimate feeling of the corner of that property. I don't know if you got that sense of it too. Is that how you would describe that corner of the property?
I think it's intimate. I think you're right. And I knew that Rockfield had something to offer. And we go back to that unannounced walk around I did that day in the rain. Mm-hmm. When I got over to 15 fairway, 15 tee, 15 fairway, and I saw that landform in front of the green, and the features that were there, and I thought, this place is different, man. This place is, there's something lurking here. It's like the old rustic car in the barn find, if that makes sense to you.
100%.
It's like there's something really cool. We just have to uncover it. And when Mr. Smith found the aerials and we were able to restore it, as you saw, what people don't realize is that horizon line that's in the fairway previous to the green, in the foreground of the green, it is aligned perfectly so that it gives you glimpses of the surface of the green, and you think the green is right on top of that ridge.
Yep.
And you think, who figured this out? How cool is that?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I think that those are things that people don't, you know, maybe they don't talk about it enough, but when the layering, golf course architects lay things out and the way they connect, you know, the same hole, you know, continuous holes, eye lines, it's amazing to me. And that's definitely one good example of it.
That's an excellent example. And you think to yourself, did I take the time to look at that? My friend Bill Coor and a gentleman by the name of Rod Whitman, they've worked together for many, many years. Rod Whitman always liked to say, and I paraphrase it, mm-hmm. you need to know how to look what you're looking for.
Right, right.
You have to know how to look what you're looking for. And most people probably don't equate that horizon line tying into that green. But I guarantee you, if somebody listens to this station who goes out there and plays it the next couple of days, they look at that horizon and is like, huh, I never noticed that.
Yeah.
But it's always been there. And Anthony, I didn't invent it. I just recaptured it.
Sure.
I just restored it. And thankfully, the club allowed me to show off, I say in a figure of speech, show off what Rockfield was all about.
Yep. You know, there's another saying that I like and I think you'll appreciate on some level, and that is, like, a good teacher doesn't help a student reach their potential, it helps. They help the student create the potential for more potential. And I think when golf courses think, or golf course architects do things like that, they're creating the potential for more potential so that you can enjoy it on a number of different levels. Does that make sense?
It does make total sense. And on top of that, Anthony, on top of the me having the chance to restore Devereaux Emmett, we now have to interject another important piece to the puzzle, and that's the presentation of the golf course.
Yep.
And Luke Knutson, who does the presentation of the golf course, the superintendent and his staff, have they dialed that place up to perfection or what?
I mean, thank you for the built-in segue, because that was my next area of what I wanted to get into, and that is working once the superintendent gets in, and obviously the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association is chock full of wonderful people and great guys. And as you noted, Luke being one of them. Actually, a little side note, Luke was the first superintendent I had on my show when I started 10 years ago.
Great.
And so he was the first person I had. And so, you know, talk a little bit about that relationship, because you sort of have, you know, you're like the man in the middle between the superintendent and the Greens Committee, and you're sort of communicating with both, and Luke is sort of, you know, he understands it on a building level and maintaining level. So talk a little bit about that relationship.
Well, I can tell you if the golf course superintendent doesn't buy into the notion of golden age design and doesn't embrace all that encompasses it, then I will be a failure in my process.
Right.
And I truly mean that, Anthony, because Luke has to take the architecture and he has to present it so that members can enjoy it. And what Luke did and what Luke allowed me to do, you know what, Anthony? You know what Luke never said to me? Never said to me? He never said, "Oh, Jim, we can't do that."
Right.
He never said that to me. You know what he said to me? "Tell me how you want it. We'll get it done." How does that sound for a total commitment to the Devereaux Emmett's legacy and the commitment to the club to make it right? "Jim, you tell me how you want it. We'll make it happen."
That's amazing.
How could you fail? How could you make a mistake? How could you not put in that 100% effort every day when you have somebody behind you, somebody leading you both ways and to the pursuit of perfection in the detail work? And you look at his stuff. You look how he mows it. You look how he preps it. You look how he gets the texture and even his pollinators, his out of play pollinary areas.
Yep, yep.
Everything's in detail. That's what Luke does. If Luke doesn't buy into it, we're not a success. The club doesn't enjoy it. The golf course superintendent has to and is the most important cog in the wheel of golf course architecture.
Yeah, I believe it. And he does have it dialed in. It's and that's a great word that you used, the word texture. That you know, good golf courses, when you visually, there's a feeling to them, there's a sense to them, and there's a texture to them, and that definitely has it. I told you, well, actually, while we're on it, I'll come back to the golf course in a second, but since we're talking about Luke and the work of the golf course superintendent, talk a little bit about the agronomy there. It seems like, and I know obviously this is attributed to Luke, but the turf conditions there just seem really, really good, like really healthy. I don't pretend to know anything about agronomy, even though the Long Island Golf Course Superintendent is one of my sponsors, and I talk to them a lot about it, but I don't pretend to that I know a lot about it. And the conditions there, maybe talk a little bit about what they have there to work with.
Well, the bonus part for Luke is that he has a gravel base underneath that turf.
Okay.
And so the soils tend to drain better than, let's say, a golf course that has clay soils or a golf course that has rock outcroppings and doesn't have that gravel layer to grow on.
Mm-hmm.
But But it still takes a superintendent who understands the soil, technical side of the soil, to make it accept water and to perk through the profile so that when heavy rains do come, the water doesn't puddle. And Luke understands that. And you're right. There's other superintendents in the Long Island area that understand that. Mm-hmm. But they have to convey that science of agronomy to every member, 400, 500 members who, you know, they know how to grow grass because their grass is green in their front yard. So right. I know how to grow grass. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, but, sure. Everybody's an expert. Yeah.
Everybody's an expert. But none of those people in their front yards are mowing grass at 110,000ths of an inch. Right?
Exactly.
And so now Luke has to be a good steward of the land. He has to know how to treat the soil so they're friendly to the moisture. He has to mow grass that's 2.5 inches thick. He has to maintain grass, native grasses that are 5 and 6 inches tall. And then he also has to maintain turf on approaches and greens that are 110, 120,000ths of an inch. Not everybody could do that. Luke does it well. He understands the science. And he, guess what, Anthony? He blends the science with my art.
Yep.
So that they're compatible. They're in sync. And when you do that, you get Rockville Links.
Absolutely. That's very well said. How fun was it to do all those bunkers? You got a lot of those flat bunkers with the no flash face bunkers, just all flat bottom bunkers with the grass face. I love those. They have even the little intimate walkthroughs in them. Those must have been fun to do.
Well, fun in a sense that we were recapturing history.
Yeah.
And for Luke, again, that I can do it. You tell me how you want it, I'll get it done. A lot of people would have just said, well, that's dumb. You can't do that. That's going to take a lot of manpower. That's going to take extra effort. But Luke and his staff and his assistants were always ready to do that extra little bit in order to get those walkways, in order to get that texture, in order to get those islands, in order to marry the fairway to the trench lines, the trench bunkers. And those were all the things that Luke helped Devro Emmett recapture that true golden age design. And it's not easy, Anthony. It's not easy. People just think, oh, you just turn the mower on, pull the starter, and it does it itself. You have to have dedicated staff. You have to have a committee that understands what you're trying to do. And Luke has to communicate and prove every day, Anthony. He's got to prove what he's doing is the right thing, because you know everybody's an expert.
The every golf course has its own little personal sort of, you know, ecological climate, I guess you could say. It's always little personal nuance. How much is Rockville Links, would you say, special in the sense that it's so much, in a lot of ways, different than a lot of the golf courses around on Long Island?
Well, it's surrounded by an urban setting, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the urban setting kind of dictates what he has to deal with. Now, if that golf course, Rockville Links, was out on the southern end of Long Island with an ocean breeze and unencumbered airflow, you may have to treat it a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And you may get away with a couple things here and there. But Luke has to prepare this golf course in an urban setting, with streets going by, with homes nearby. And so he doesn't have that open airflow. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to maximize his microclimate, as you call it, his microclimate, that flat piece of ground surrounded by an urban setting. And he has to make it feel and look and play like you're out in the middle of nowhere. And I think he does that well. But he's still in that urban and micro environment. You're right. It presents a different challenge. And I think he's been up to the task along with his staff.
When you go there, I've sort of gave you a little bit of my highlights. Definitely 2 green, definitely 7 green. I really like, I like six. I like that, the visual challenge of number 6. If you're on that sort of, it has that sort of, I guess for our listeners, kind of like number one at National Golf Links, the Valley Hole, right? If you go right, you get an obstructed view of the green with that big berm, which makes things a little dicey. If you hover the left side where you get a clear view, then you have to challenge the bunkers. So I really like that. That hole is really good. But and obviously the intimate corner of 14, 15, 16. What is some of the special spots in your mind when you go there?
For sure, number two green.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of where it all started for me and Mr. Smith and the committee. But other highlights for me, for sure, is the 17th green. For sure, the 17th green.
Yeah.
It's Devereaux Emmett's. I'm not trying to imply that it's the Redan.
Right.
But it's Devereaux Emmett's play on the Redan. So you hit the ball from right to left. The green has a shoulder on the right side that kicks the ball from right to left. It's got a feature in front of it, a bunker, a cross bunker in front of the green that disguises part of the green that acts like the four bunker at the Redan at North Berwick. So it had all of those little things that caught my attention without having the big kicker of the Redan at the National or the Creek Club or other Redans of Rainer and McDonald fame. It was Devereaux Emmett's play on the Redan. I thought it was a cool, different look. The green and the way he presents the green, very detailed, just different. You're not going to see that hole anywhere else. I don't care what anybody says, Anthony. You're not going to see the 17th hole at Rothfield Links anywhere else. And for that, and for me, it's cool, different, and idyllic.
Yeah, you're right. That's another good one. I always ask this question, and it's just something that I think is interesting. If Devereaux Emmett met you back on site, if he were, what would it be? What's there that maybe you still would want to know what he was thinking or doing, or what would you want to consult with him on if you were having a conversation with him at Rockville Links?
Easy. Two holes I would definitely ask him a question on, number 12 and number 15.
Okay.
And the reason I would ask about number 12 is he indented a trench bunker that stuck out somewhat from left to right into the fairway that made the dogleg right to left. What was he thinking of the elevation? Because remember, the people were of his era, the ball was only going 180 to 220 yards.
Right.
But yet the hole is still relevant today, believe it or not. What was he thinking of why he set that angle and the way he set the green? Mm-hmm. That would be my first question. And the second question, why did he feel, what was his inspiration for why he built the 15th hole with that big ridge line going across and then the green setting up perfectly on the horizon? What was he thinking? Where did he get that from? I would have loved to have asked him 12 and 15.
That's pretty cool. Is there more to do at Rockville Links? I know obviously you have, there's always tweaks and little things here and there. Where does Rockville Links go from here? Is there a lot more left that you want to accomplish? Is there a lot more left that you feel you want to capture or recapture, as you say, at Rockville Links?
Well, for me, I think that we have done to the best of our ability capture the essence of Devereaux Emmett.
Yeah.
For Luke, he'll always be trying to fine tune that turf to the nth degree.
Sure.
But there's one hole that we were not able to restore, and that's the fifth hole at Rockville Links. The fifth hole was the original quarry hole.
Okay.
And I call it the quarry hole.
It's a little It's a little par three, about 120
That's
yards
correct.
Or so. Listeners, water kind of front right and just so that they understand what you're talking about.
Thank you. I assumed that everybody's already seen it. Sorry.
Not everybody's as lucky as us.
So yes, it is a short one shot hole, about 135.
Yeah.
Green lays on the ground, tee lays on the ground, and it has a pond in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the original hole was a quarry hole. And what I mean by that is they dug down about 15 or 20 feet, and they used that borrow pit back in the 20s to build all the rest of the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And so Devereaux Emmett, when he was done built borrowing dirt, gravel from the borrow pit, he played a one-shot hole over the top of it. And it's really unique. There's one other hole like that at Garden City Golf Club. It's the second hole at Garden City Golf Club.
Yep.
Same thing. It's a quarry. It has a short par three, has a big ravine in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they also borrowed the material. So Devereaux Emmett used it as a feature. He created his own topography. That's the only hole that has not been restored. I don't know that it ever will, but we have diagrams. We have inspiration. If they wanted to go down that road, we could certainly put it back. But I call it the quarry hole. It's the fifth hole at Rockfield Links, one-shot hole, about 135.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only hole we did not do.
Yeah, I agree.
And if they never did it, I'm okay with it. But if they wanted to really recapture the last inch of their restoration, that would be one thing that the club could consider. It's up to them. It's up to them.
Sure. I think it would be worth doing, only from someone, you know, from my standpoint. You've gone, you know, so far, and I get there are costs involved. There are other considerations. There are other capital improvements you want to make to a golf course. I'm not, but you've come so far, and that place has come so far. At least it appears to have come so far. You might as well cross over the goal line, in my mind.
Well, that's totally up to them. I wish them all the best.
Yeah,
they'll be celebrating the centennial here soon.
Yeah,
go and play it, have fun. But remember, if they wanted to, as you said, cross the goal line, that would be the last hole that could be done.
Sure. I want to just finish with what's on the horizon for you. Anything that you want to talk about? Anything that you would like to discuss that you're sort of excited about down the road?
Well, down the road, I have a couple new designs on the drawing boards that I hope that they'll be permitted soon and I can start building
mm-hmm.
new designs. But a couple things that I'm excited about is the restoration of a couple Seth Rayner golf courses, one in New York and one in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most exciting things for me, because I'm an Alistair McKenzie fan, I will be restoring the only Alistair McKenzie course in Canada, and I'm looking forward to that.
Oh.
It's on the docket to do. Our little hiccup curve that we went through this spring put a halt to it.
Sure.
But I hope that we get through this safely and that everybody is back to normal within reason, and I get go up there and finish restoring the only Alistair McKenzie course in Canada. It's truly an iconic piece of architecture, and I'm truly looking forward to doing that for Winnipeg and the St. Charles Club.
A lot of people, we study a lot of and talk a lot about Golden Age architects, and we talk a lot about styles and stuff like that. What's Jim Urbina's style? In 100 years, when some people are doing a podcast and they're listening to you and I talk, and they're looking and they're talking about Jim Urbina and his original golf courses, What do you think they're going to say about them? Is there a specific flavor to them, or is there a specific style that you think sort of that makes it yours, or is it you just marry the course with the land and that's the end of it?
Well, I marry the course with the land, and that is important to be as natural as possible.
Mm-hmm.
On my website, if you look at it, the banner on top of my logo, Jim Urbina Golf Design, says, "Golf is supposed to be fun. Spread the word." That's what I want people to remember about my golf courses for years to come, that he built a golf course that was challenging, but mostly it was fun. I love Golden Age designs. I love the strategy that is encompassing. We talked about a little bit today about Devereaux Emmett, but a Jim Urbina golf design will marry the land and the design, and it will be fun to play. And lastly, you'll have options to play it, where the ground game will be as important as the aerial game. And that's really what I wanted to be remembered by. That, Anthony, if you want to hit your ball high up into the air where it touches the clouds and lands in the same spot where I hit my 7-iron, bumped on the ground and rolled up, that would be my perfect scenario. That may be my ultimate reward. That would be a Jim Urbina golf design.
I love it. And with that, folks, Mr. Jim Urbina. Jim, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you joining me today.
That was a blast. That was a blast, Anthony. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. All right, that was Jim Urbina, golf course architect and legend, and talking about Rockville Links. Really appreciate his time. I hope you enjoy, folks, and as always, thank you for your support.